Hey there, business builders. Ever found yourself counting sheep long into the night while your thoughts are filled with your business to-do lists? Well, in today's episode, we tackle the vital yet often overlooked subject of sleep for business professionals. Today, we're talking with Dr. Kristen Kemp, a renowned sleep psychologist, about how to get better sleep, which in turn leads to better business performance. Well, welcome to the Business Builders Podcast. We are your hosts. I am Brenton Gowland.
And I'm Ron Tomlin.
And Ron, well, actually, before we get cracking into it, we didn't put out a podcast last week. We were 1 week late.
Yes. Well, busyness that to you.
It's because we've got a special guest today and we had to wait for this person. So,
Well worth the wait, I would say.
Yeah. So we thought we wouldn't throw in a little episode in between to pad it. We thought we'd just wait an extra week. So if you were going, what happened to you guys last week? Well, we were getting ready for today. And in our last podcast, you threw down a bit of a challenge.
I did. I challenged you and our listeners, but you get included in that to make sure that you book a holiday of some sort, even if it's a weekend away. Mm. Have you done your homework, Brenton?
Well, we've booked a weekend away in early December, but it's just for the weekend. And I'm suggesting that we have a longer holiday in New Zealand, but we're just negotiating costs at the moment.
Well, yeah, just think about this. When you're 80 years old,
yes,
will you say, I wish we'd gone to New Zealand? I regret having not gone to. Think about the consequences of not going instead of the cost of actually going, because there's a cost to not going.
That's a very good point. I know a certain person I need to talk about that with, which is all good. She's very concerned about all the things, making sure that we budget correctly and budget wisely. So that sometimes comes into that holiday arrangement too, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's worth thinking about, but don't prevent yourself from taking. You can even take a holiday down to, I don't know, Goolwa or somewhere like that.
Well, I've heard on the grapevine, probably from our guest when we had our pre-chat, that Goolwa Beach is one of the best places in the world.
Yeah, well, I'd agree with that. I do think Kerikalinga sneaks in a little bit.
So we better get into introducing our guest then without any further delay.
Okay, so let's get on to it. Joining us today on the Business Builders Podcast is Dr. Kristen Kemp. Now, Kristen is an experienced sleep psychologist, which is so appropriate for today, and has a passion for helping individuals achieve their optimal rest. She has a career spanning over two decades and has dedicated herself to understanding the intricacies of sleep and its profound impact on our daily lives, which it does have. Having completed her extensive studies at Flinders University under the tutelage of Professor Leon Lack, a leading world expert in sleep, she conducted research in bright light therapy for circadian rhythm disorders and innovative non-drug therapies for insomnia, and I want to hear more about that later on today. Mm. As the director of the Adelaide Insomnia Clinic since 2004, Kristen has been at the forefront of sleep health, providing in-depth assessments and treatments for a myriad of sleep disorders. Her commitment to this field is also reflected in her contributions to the Australian Psychological Society, College of Clinical Psychologists, and the Australian Sleep Association. Today, she's here to share her wealth of knowledge and offer practical advice that can help you, our business builders, not just chase your dreams, but also catch them every night. And just, yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. And that's you, Brenton. You can take the boy out of advertising, but you can't take the advertising out of the boy.
I might have written that introduction. I liked that.
It's great. Thank you so much for having me here today.
And thank you for being here, Kristen.
It's a pleasure to have you. And I can genuinely say, we had Dr. Samantha Young on a little while ago, and Dr. Samantha said you must get Dr. Kristen Kemp on the show because she is an expert in sleep, and I have been looking forward to talking about this since we started this series on life-work balance. So lovely to have you with us.
Lovely to be here. Thank you.
So to start with, Kristen, can you share with our listeners how your journey in sleep psychology began and what led you to specialize in the treatment of sleep disorders?
Yes. Well, my sleep journey began at Flinders University in 1987. And Flinders had a very strong sleep psychology stream. And that was under the leadership of Professor Leon Lack. So he, as you mentioned, he's a world-renowned sleep expert. And Leon was my supervisor for my honours thesis. And then I did the master's at Flinders, and then I decided to explore the world a little bit, and I went to family court and I did my PhD at family court. And then I had a job working with sex offenders. That was a pretty tough gig. And then I worked at the Women's and Children's Hospital. And then I had a couple of kids myself. And then I reflected back on everything and thought, what do I really want to do for the rest of my life? And I circled right back to sleep disorders. And I started my practice in 2004, specializing in sleep disorders. And I can say with my hand on my heart that I absolutely love it. And the reason I decided to specialize in sleep disorders is because the treatments are very effective. And relative to, say, treating depression or anxiety, the number of sessions, I probably only see my patients for about 4 sessions, unless there are more complex issues. So I have some happy customers at the end, and I just love it.
Being married to a psychologist, I know what you're talking about in terms of sometimes the difficulties in treating some of the disorders that she sees. And to have that sort of lifestyle where you actually know you're going to be able to help almost categorically, that would be wonderful.
And you mentioned that the treatments are not necessarily using drugs of any description.
Definitely non-drug, yeah.
So are any of your treatments using drugs, or is it all non-drug?
No, no. So psychologists don't prescribe drugs. So our philosophy would be, let's try and fix the problem with using behavioural or cognitive treatments. So I'm getting people off drugs.
Wow, that's, to me, very impressive.
Mm. It's rewarding.
I've had sleep problems in the past and I've popped a pill here or there.
Yeah.
That's been prescribed to me by a doctor.
Yeah, of course.
But I never felt good about that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess the media tells us a lot, not to mention our GPs. I think there is that understanding that sleeping pills are addictive and people develop tolerance to the sleeping pills. But by the time people get to me, they're often taking a couple of sleeping pills every night.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So there's 2 jobs. One is to get them sleeping better, but the second one is get them off the pills as well.
Are you saying the sleeping pills are not working?
Yeah, definitely by the time people get to me, it would be rare that the sleeping pills will be working, because the sleeping pills like temazepam, oxazepam, people develop a tolerance, so they lose their effectiveness over time.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going to get into it now, and because the Business Builders podcast is about talking to business professionals who are working on developing themselves in order to develop their businesses.
So important.
Yeah. So given the high-pressure environment that many business owners operate in, and during our pre-chat we discussed this a little bit, what are the early warning signs of insomnia that they should not ignore, or we should not ignore? Because I've suffered lack of sleep on many occasions during my business life.
I have to give you my card just in case. Yeah. So, well, typically poor sleep in people who own their own business, typically it starts by a person will recognize that they're lying in bed and they're thinking about what has happened in the day. All the things that didn't get done in the day, were there any dramas that happened at work? Were there any difficult personality issues with staff? And then they might be thinking about all the things they've got to do tomorrow. Because sometimes when a person gets to bed, it's the first time they've actually had time in the day to just reflect back on the day, because they're so busy. And so people get into bed and start overthinking these things. And then what happens is they realize, oh, gee, I haven't gone off to sleep yet. And, oh, gee, I've only got 6 more hours left in bed. And then what happens inside of them is their adrenal system starts releasing stress hormones, because they're already stressed about what's been going on at work, but then they start to get stressed about not being able to go to sleep. So it's like a double whammy. And then, yeah, the adrenal system releases cortisol, it releases adrenaline. And the whole idea of the stress hormones is to keep us awake. Because if you encounter a stressful situation in the day, Ron's mentioned a really good metaphor that I love about, if you're hiking and you come across a snake on your hike, you're going to get that adrenal response and the fight or flight reaction. And if you actually fall asleep when you see a snake, that's not good for survival. So if we're stressed about work, or if we're stressed about sleep, then our adrenal system is just doing what it's programmed to do, which is release stress hormones and hello wakefulness.
Okay. And we were talking earlier about the fact it's okay if that happens every now and again because, you know, your mind races. There'll be, for me at the moment, that might happen once every 3 months. So I don't see that as a problem. But I remember when I started my business way back when, it would be every second night.
Yeah. So good sleepers have bad nights every now and then.
Yeah.
Even the sleep psychologist once in a while, I'll have a bad night. But a good sleeper will generally bounce back the next night. Whereas for a person to technically have insomnia, the sleep problem has to last for about 3 months and it has to be more often than not. 3 months
is a long time.
Yeah, yeah. And they're not feeling good by the end of that.
So the early warning signs then is that it's a prolonged period of time that more often than not you're having a bad night's sleep.
Yes. So there's the nighttime situation where a person is aware of overthinking in the night, having trouble to go to sleep, waking up in the night, having trouble going back to sleep, waking up too early and switching on about what's happening in the day. But then there's also the daytime functioning. So people who, if a sleep problem's building up, they'll drag themselves out of bed, but then they might start to get that adrenal response again because they're thinking, oh my God, I didn't get much sleep last night and now I got to do all my work today. And people overuse caffeine, even driving to work, they might think, oh my God, like, am I safe to be on the road? But then there's irritability, there's memory problems and what else do people have? Attention, concentration problems. Yeah, so they're probably the common signs that a sleep disorder is developing.
Okay, that's really interesting. And I think that's some good food for thought. So all of us, every now and again, we have a bad night's sleep, but what percentage of the people out there are suffering insomnia from your experience?
Yeah, so technically what surveys will show is 15 to 20% of our population have a sleep problem. So if you think of how many people you have in your workplace, 15 to 20% are probably having a sleep problem. And I was at the Australasian Sleep Conference last week. One of the amazing presenters, this is Amy Reynolds from Flinders Uni, she presented some really fascinating information. If you've got a person who has a sleep disorder at work, they are going to cost you $7,000.
A year?
Yep.
For what reason? Just because absenteeism or?
Absenteeism and presenteeism.
Oi.
Yeah. So a person who doesn't have a sleep disorder on average will take a week off in a year. I'm not talking about annual leave, but a person without a sleep disorder might have a week off in a year, but a person who has a sleep disorder will take 4 weeks off in that year.
Right.
Because of the sleep problem. So that's absenteeism, but there's also presenteeism, which I think is really interesting too, that if a person has a sleep disorder, they're not on their A game.
No, that's right.
Yeah. And so that's going to be costing the business as well. So what Amy was saying at the conference was, if you have got a staff member with a sleep disorder, it's actually going to be cheaper for you to send them off to get treated than it is to just keep them there.
Okay. So like in summary, probably 15 to 20% of the people listening to this podcast have a sleep disorder.
Yes. Like a diagnosable sleep disorder.
And based on what you're saying, the next question I was going to ask you was about basically how chronic sleep disruption affects our daily performance. And I think you've really spoken into that. So we've talked about staff. What about business owners and entrepreneurs? How does that lack of sleep affect their performance? I'd imagine poor decisions in the business world about their businesses. And
We've talked about carrying an allostatic load previously.
Yeah.
And the problems associated with that. And oftentimes it's because they've got not getting enough sleep. Things like taking twice as long to make decisions, being reflective, not being able to think strategically. But if you are not getting sleep, what are the performance indicators or what are the effects on performance that people will see as a result of not getting enough sleep?
So are you meaning like if you're the boss in a workplace and you're observing your staff, what would you say?
No, but I'm talking more about the actual entrepreneurs and owners themselves. If you're not getting enough sleep, what effect does that have on your performance?
Just so many effects. It's all what you, the two of you and Sam have been talking about. But, you know, things like, yeah, then you're not leading your business if you've got a sleep problem.
Yeah.
And the two of you and Sam talked so well about that, that if you own your business, you have to be a leader. And that's different to managing people, like you've been saying too. So you're not going to be leading your staff. You're going to be making poor decisions, not seeing the big picture, being irritable with staff, and also perhaps more likely to walk past bad behaviours in the workplace because I'm too tired to deal with it. And then there's a, unfortunately, that affects on the culture of the staff and, yeah, not so good.
No, not at all. And one of the things that we continually talk about is the need for the owner of the business, so the leader of the business, to model the right sort of behaviour.
Sure.
And if you're modelling the sort of behaviour because of a lack of sleep,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to be the type of thing you want your staff to reflect back to you.
You're so right. Yeah. If you're irritable yourself, then what message does that send to the rest of the staff?
I worry more about the impacts of bad decisions or making snap decisions, because when you're tired and irritable, and I've seen this happen before with my business partners, when we get grumpy with each other, and you get grumpy when you're tired because just small things just set off that bomb. And if you say the wrong thing and blow up at a staff member, it can have bad ramifications.
You are so right. Yep. So anyone who has a sleep problem is not going to be as patient and tolerant as what they would normally be. And just sleep problems, I think, make us forget why we do this, because it's too hard. You know, if you're tired and you've got memory problems and you're irritable and you're not making good decisions, then it's easy to ask that question of why am I doing this? But if a person is sleeping well and they are on their A game during the day, then you enjoy a business more.
And that gets to the point of what is enough sleep?
Yeah, good question.
And a lot of people will say you've got to have 8 hours. And other people say, oh, I can get by with 5.
Well, I'm
sure that you're going to tell us that everyone's different. But when should I be concerned as a business builder? When should I be concerned that I'm not getting enough sleep?
Probably go by daytime functioning, I would say, because like you were saying, the average amount of sleep for an adult between the ages of about 30 and 75 is 7 hours of sleep. So if you get on Dr. Google and it says if you're not getting 8 hours of sleep, there's something wrong. Well, that's not actually true. Our sleep needs decline over our lifespan.
You said our sleep needs decline over our lifespan.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Teenagers get about 9 hours of sleep. When we're in our 20s, it goes down to 8. Between the ages of 30 and 75, it goes down to 7. And then after the age of about 75, it goes down to 6, 6.5. And one of the reasons we think that happens is because as we get older, we're more sedentary and we're not moving around as much as a teenager. So I guess one of the morals of that story is don't stop moving your body. So the busier and the more active you are in the day, especially during your retirement, the more sleep you'll get.
Wow, that's really interesting.
That's interesting because you go to a lot of nursing homes and all they seem to do is sleep.
Yes.
And that's that, what you're saying is that can develop chronic sleep problems as a result.
Yeah, well, the amount of benzodiazepines that are handed out in elderly care facilities, it's a worry.
So what if you get too much sleep, right? So I probably exist on 6 hours sleep a night and that tends to be okay.
Yeah.
My partner probably sleeps about 9 hours a night.
Does she sleep 9 hours though?
Oh, well, if I don't disturb her, yes.
Is it good quality sleep?
I think so most of the time.
Yeah. So, you know, the law of averages, if the average for us adults is 7 hours, then there are some people that need 9 and there are some people that get away with 6. So, Brenton, if you weren't getting enough sleep, you will know about it in the day.
Yeah.
You'll be dragging yourself through mud through the day. And people know when they've got a sleep problem. They know when they're not functioning at their best. And I guess maybe that's when it's time to think, well, maybe I should do something about it. But if you get 6 hours of sleep and you feel like you function pretty well, but given that a good sleeper has a bit of fatigue in the afternoon, like that's normal. But if you feel like generally you're on your A game, 6 hours is enough for you.
Okay. But if we take that a step further and we go, can you have too much sleep?
Yeah.
There's a gentleman I know, when he went through depression, he couldn't get out of bed.
Yes, yes. Sometimes when people have depression, they don't get enough sleep because they have a lot of early morning awakening. But some people oversleep, and that's a way of hiding from the world.
Yeah.
So if I'm depressed and I just pull back the covers over my head and try to go back to sleep, I don't have to deal with the world. And also seasonal affective depression, when people get the winter blues, is also associated with oversleeping. Yeah.
Especially in countries like Sweden and so on. With
yeah, where there's
where they don't have a lot of sun.
No.
Yeah, no. That's right.
I'm lucky we're in Australia.
Yes, exactly. Beautiful sun.
If anyone from Sweden is listening, we think Sweden's a great place too.
Yeah, there's a good destination for a holiday.
That's true.
There you go.
Kristen, could you walk us through a typical scenario you've encountered with business owners or entrepreneurs? How they develop insomnia? What causes it?
Well, I have got a bit of a case study that I could go through with you. So, like I mentioned before, with a business owner, because it is a highly pressurized environment, like that is true, work demands are high, it seems like there's never enough time to get everything done. And then people lie awake in bed thinking about it. So I'll give you a case study. So we've got Mary, who's 50 years old. She's married with two teenagers and she lives in the city. She owned a business selling baby furniture and products, and she had about three shops and a staff of about 10. She had a husband who was in between jobs. He had been really stressed in his job and he wasn't working at the time. So she felt really financially responsible to keep the herd moving ahead. Mm-hmm. And they were also building a house. And so she came to me with poor sleep and, taking a while to go off to sleep. She was waking for about 2 hours every night and overthinking all the stressful things that were going on in her world. Was taking at least an hour to go to sleep. She was getting not even 6 hours of sleep. Probably most of my patients only are getting 4 or 5 hours of sleep in a night. And she was only asleep for 72% of the time she was in bed. And for a good sleeper is asleep for 85% of the time they're in bed. Yep, so that's normal. She said she would stay in bed during the night until it was futile, and then she would get up and watch TV. She said she was feeling washed out when she got out of bed, so not refreshed at all, like she'd been in a tumble dryer all night. She felt tired driving to work. At work, she said she was going through the motions. She was flat at work. She was not enthusiastic, not motivated. She said she was pretty much able to meet deadlines, but she just couldn't be bothered. You know, so she was losing the why of why she was doing her business. People at work said they noticed that she didn't look happy. This was a real trouble for her. She had one of her staff members who had a bit of a personality issue. He caused troubles with other staff members, but he was the best for sales. So she felt really torn that he was doing some really good sales for her business, but he created some chaos with her staff. So there was that dilemma, do I keep him on or do I let go of him? She was drinking a couple of glasses of wine every night to try and relax. Sometimes people drink wine as a sleep aid because it can make us sleepy, but it actually disrupts our sleep. It suppresses the dreaming sleep later on in the night. So we wake up and find it hard to go back to sleep. She was also napping in front of the TV, which is definitely not a good sign because napping in front of the TV before bed is like having a snack before dinner. You're not going to be so hungry if you have a snack before dinner. So if you nap before bed, you're not going to be so sleepy and you're not going to have such a good night. So she was getting into bed overthinking and not being able to stay asleep. So for my plan with Mary, the first thing I had to do was I had to get her sleeping well again. Okay. And she was also anxious about her sleep. So I had to teach her some skills about how to manage her sleep anxiety. But we also had to explore her goals for work. So some of the things, the brilliant things you've mentioned on your podcast before is asking yourself, like, what is your definition of success here? Are you content with how you're living your life? What are the pros and cons of living the way you do? Like, she wasn't spending enough time with her kids and she was working like more than 50 hours a week and just burning the candle at both ends, and she clearly wasn't happy. And we also talked about that really good question of when you're 80 and you look back on your life, will you be glad that you lived this way or will you have regrets? Like, is this a life well lived? So we also had to look at those things to help her prevent relapsing, because if you can improve a person's sleep, but if you send them back into the fire, it's like if a person's being bullied at work, we have to address the bullying as well. Otherwise, there's only so much that we can do. So that, I'm not sure if that might be a segue into talking about how we actually do improve a person's sleep. I think that would be a really helpful thing for the listeners to hear about.
100%.
Yeah. So given that Mary was, she was taking about an hour to go off to sleep and she was awake for a couple of hours every night overthinking, and she was only asleep for 72% of the time she was in bed. And sometimes it can be worse than that for other people. Like, they might only be asleep for 50 or 60% of the time they're in bed. So here is the good news, the really good news. There are very effective behavioral treatments to get a person sleeping well. And the what I have found over 20 years is the most effective way to get a person sleeping well again is a treatment called bedtime restriction. So I'll tell you all about it. So often a person who has insomnia is spending about 9 hours in bed. So and the reason they're doing that is they're thinking thoughts like, oh, I'm sleeping so badly, I've got to get into bed early, I was napping on the couch, maybe I just need to get into bed. And they snooze their alarms for as long as they can in the morning. And then it's a mad rush to get going in the morning. So often people with insomnia are spending about 9 hours in bed. But going back to what I was saying before, the average amount of sleep for a good sleeper is 7 hours. So if you spend 9 hours in bed, but the average amount of sleep for an adult is 7, you should expect to be awake for 2 hours every night. So what bedtime restriction does is it restricts a person to bed for a very short period of time for 1 week. And the short period of time, hold on, is only 6 hours. Okay. So for example, they get into bed at 12 and they get out of bed at 6, just as an example. Now, if you imagine doing that, only spending 6 hours in bed every night for a week, what you can probably imagine is after a couple of nights of doing this, people get very sleepy. And I don't mean a little bit sleepy. I mean very sleepy. Because what we know very clearly about insomnia is when a person gets into bed and they've got insomnia, they've lost their sleepiness. So when a good sleeper gets into bed, they feel sleepy. And when a good sleeper wakes up in the middle of the night, they still feel sleepy and they go back to sleep. But when a person has insomnia, they've lost that sleepiness, and that's because of the adrenal response. So, of course, a person's going to be stressed if they're not sleeping well. And their body, the reason why is because their body is releasing stress hormones. And so hello, wakefulness in the night. So what the treatment aims to do is to retrain a person's sleep mechanism about how to feel sleepy again. So we all have this process inside of us, and we call it process S, and we keep it simple in sleep psychology. The S just stands for sleepiness. Okay. So process S is what we call a homeostatic drive inside of us. So we have other homeostatic drives. One is hunger and one is thirst. So the reason we have these homeostatic drives is to try and keep balance in our body. So our brain and our body loves it when we're in beautiful balance, when we're getting enough food, we're getting enough water, and we're getting enough sleep. So if we don't eat food all day, we're going to get hungry. If we don't drink enough water, we're going to get thirsty. So if I restrict a person to bed for only 6 hours a night, they are going to get sleepy. So it taps into this homeostatic drive for sleep, and it retrains the person's sleep mechanism about how to feel sleepy again. And even though it's hard, people love feeling sleepy again. It's like, oh, I'm looking forward to getting into bed. My bed's becoming a nice place to be again. But it is hard to only spend 6 hours in bed, and it's hard to get out of bed in the morning. But fortunately, most of my patients are soldiers and they do it. You got to be careful about them driving into work when they're doing the 6-hour restriction because they're going to be more tired in that first week.
Well, I've heard that lack of sleep is equivalent to being under the influence of alcohol.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. So reaction time is down. Yeah, people aren't paying attention as much. Yeah. So the first week is pretty tough, but what happens after about 3 nights of doing that is people start to go to sleep quicker. It reduces all the wakefulness in the night. So if a person is sleeping more in the night, they're not thinking in the night. So for 80% of my patients, if I get them sleeping better, I don't even have to address thinking in the night because if they're sleeping, they're not thinking.
So that's 1 week you do that for.
Yes. And then week two, you add 30 minutes to the time in bed.
Ah,
yeah. So you build up this thing called sleep pressure, which is the homeostatic drive for sleep. And then in week two, you add 30 minutes and people are so sleepy, they will kill for more time in bed. So you add on the extra 30 minutes and they get up to another 30 minutes of sleep.
So 6.5 hours sleep a night. Yep.
So, and then even though they're getting more sleep in week two, it's still not enough time in bed, obviously. So then every week after that, we try and add another 30 minutes. And as long as they're still sleepy, they'll keep getting more sleep. And usually it's about 6 to 8 weeks of doing this. We get to a stage where they will know themselves. There is no point adding more time onto bed because if they do, they're going to lose their sleepiness. So one of the biggest messages coming back to the question about preventing sleep disorders is you've got to be sleepy when you get into your bed. And if you're not sleepy, you're probably not going to go off to sleep. So this is a really paradoxical thing that when people come to see a sleep psychologist, you know, when I say to them, well, the way we fix this is you're going to spend less time in bed, they go, well, how does that work? How am I going to get more sleep by spending less time in bed?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, but it's an amazing treatment though. It is very effective.
So what does that say for Saturday sleep-ins?
Yep.
Are they good things to do?
Good question. So for a good sleeper, absolutely can have a sleep-in and take a cup of coffee back to bed, read the paper. So a good sleeper can do those things because it's associating your bed with something really nice to do. But a person who has insomnia is usually stressing in their bed and they're overthinking things and they've got that hyper arousal response and bed isn't a nice place to be. So if you're a good sleeper, you absolutely can have a Saturday morning sleep in or lie in bed and go through some social media or read a book or a good sleeper gets away with it.
Well, my pattern with my partner and I don't know about you, Ron, but we flick through all the social media before bed and then in the morning I'm reading the paper in bed on my phone and all that.
But going through social media, if I'm not incorrect, any type of screen time before bed, the blue light helps keep you asleep.
Keep
you awake, I should say.
That is true. These days, though, fortunately, the screens have those night shift functions on. So if you've got the night shift function on, which turns the screen a little bit orangey, what research will show very clearly is it's the blue-green wavelengths of light that suppress a hormone called melatonin. And if melatonin is suppressed, we're not so sleepy. Whereas if the night shift function is taking out the blue-green light, then the light from the screen isn't necessarily going to interfere with sleep. But for teenagers, even though they've got their night shift function on, sometimes the things that they're looking at are stimulating.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so it's not just the light from the screens that can interfere with sleep, but it's what a person's watching.
The content is.
Yeah.
So that leads us on to another thought, which was during COVID, a lot of people used their bedrooms as their workstation, right?
Mm.
And I told you that when I was younger and I was sharing house with a few people, my bedroom also had my desk in. I was running my business from my bedroom. So I'd walk 3 steps and be in bed and 3 steps and be in my workstation. How many of your clients have those kind of issues that their bedroom doubles as a workspace?
Oh, look, that kept me in business over COVID. Oh, the number of patients I had where the isolation and the lockdowns were contributing to sleep problems. I had such a long waiting list. Definitely that was a problem. Also, just on that as well, when people couldn't go into work, there's no commute. So people were staying longer in bed and going on what I was just saying before. If you spend longer in bed, you're going to pay off all of that sleep pressure. And also when people work from home, sometimes they would have the option of perhaps having a bit of a nap in the afternoon, but there was no life-work balance during that time because people had a little bit more freedom to decide when they worked. So they might throw on a load of washing, take the dog for a walk, and then work after dinner and work in their beds.
I know people who did that. I did that.
Mm. And it's still a very common problem with uni students. So they study in their beds. Yeah. So we do need to have that delineation between where we sleep and where we work.
And if you're forced, because when we talk about uni students, and a lot of them, if they're staying near the uni, they'll usually have like a one bedroom place with a kitchen and everything and all in the same space.
Yes.
How do they create separation then?
One of my patients at the moment, she gets home from work, she puts her jammies on, she sits on the couch and puts the TV on, might go and heat something in the microwave, eats her dinner on the couch, and then ends up going to sleep on the couch. But yeah, to delineate that, I'd say definitely don't sleep on the couch, but have the bed as a separate place in the studio. And just make sure that you don't work or live in your bed. Like, we shouldn't live in our beds. Beds are really meant for sleep. So
try as much as you can to keep the bedroom or, well, it really does become the bedroom, right? Because the bed is the main thing in the room, generally, as the bedroom, and spend less time in it.
Yeah, don't live in your bed. Like, a good sleeper can read a book before they go off to sleep.
Interesting.
Or a good sleeper can read the paper, or even a good sleeper, God forbid, can flick through social media, you know, use a screen in bed. But we still go off to sleep because a good sleeper isn't stressed about their sleep. We just know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's really that stressing about your sleep, like thinking, you know, I've been good today. I didn't have much caffeine. I did some relaxation after work. I should be good to go tonight. So there's this analogy of, imagine if you're walking through a food court and all you can see is food around you. When a person isn't sleeping well, their whole day is thinking about, is this going to be good for my sleep tonight? Or is this going to be bad? Or I can't do this, or I should do that because it might affect my sleep tonight. So people who have poor sleep are thinking about their sleep all the time, but that's not what a good sleeper does.
No.
Because we just know it's going to happen.
All right. So you've talked to us a little bit about how you treat insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
What about preventing insomnia for those of us who are listening right now and going,
"Ooh,
maybe I'm spending too much time in my bedroom right now." Could you maybe talk to us about the people who are juggling the demands of business and, you know, like your client, you were saying, he comes home and still works and she's on the couch. But if we're talking to business people who are starting to go, "Oh, maybe I'm spending too much time in my bed." How can we act to prevent insomnia?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I want to do you out of any business, but so that we don't need to
go to
a sleep expert.
Yeah. Well, things like only get into bed when you're sleepy. So for some of my patients, I have to talk them through, like, what would you do? What would you do if you had an extra couple of hours every day? I actually love having that conversation because it's about having a life-work balance, isn't it? So you can't just work and go to bed. Like, we're supposed to have leisure time where we do our hobbies and interests and spend time with our family and go out with our friends. And so when I'm telling a person to stay up a bit later or get out of bed earlier, then I get excited about it. It's like, right, you've always wanted to be one of those people that get up in the morning and go for a walk or do some exercise or go to the gym. You have a hobby in making candles, or you have a hobby in something creative. You
like
photography. Yeah. But they've shoved all that in the spare room and they haven't been doing any of their interests or hobbies. So it's nice homework. It's like when Ron gives us the challenge of organizing a holiday. It's nice homework, isn't it? So have a life, like have a life outside of work. And if you get home from work and you just plonk yourself in front of the TV, it's okay. But what that can also lead to is getting into bed a bit early or napping on the couch and thinking, oh, well, I must be sleepy. I'll just get into bed. And then hello, 9 hours in bed. But if you've got some hobbies or interests that you do, engage in that after work.
Mm.
And yeah, not napping.
So keep active to stop yourself from getting into bed basically.
Too early. Yeah.
That's interesting. Really interesting.
Yeah. And don't sleep in too late. Don't, if you're snoozing it every 10 minutes, really that's wasted time. And it's not pleasant. It's not pleasant.
Look,
time.
I do that probably 3 times. Every morning.
And what I'm hearing from you is that being engaged in something, not just being passive, and that's one of the problems with watching TV or streaming services and so on. It's a passive form of entertainment that we don't really have to be engaged with, and it allows us to drift.
You're so right.
And so what I'm hearing from you is do something that engages you, enjoy, but that gets you involved rather than being passive.
Absolutely. Yeah. If there are some community clubs that you've always wanted to join, or if you want to do a WAA course, like sometimes when people have a sleep problem, they cancel and opt out of social engagements after work because they think, oh, I might be too stimulated and then I'll get into bed and I won't sleep. But that just means the person is missing out on life.
Mm.
Sometimes, like if you go to the GP, sometimes a GP will hand you all that sleep hygiene advice, like you're not allowed to drink coffee, you're not allowed to drink alcohol, you're not allowed to go out and be too stimulated, you have to wind down, you're not allowed to get on a screen, which ends up being a little bit like the fun police. And some people are following those rules so strictly, but they're not having a life.
Mm-hmm.
And good sleepers don't have to do that.
What strikes me as well is I think your advice about getting a hobby and doing other things is actually good for business people as well. Because we were talking about burnout with Dr. Samantha Young, and it becomes, she said it's a syndrome, it's a cycle,
right?
So you've got to find ways to break the cycle and you've got to find ways to stimulate yourself in other ways than always thinking about work.
That is so right, Brenton. And because I think things like having hobbies and interests, and like Ron talks about all the time, is having a holiday. If you're a business owner, you're probably less likely to have holidays because you think, well, I haven't got the time. But do you know what? As soon as you get in the car and you're traveling down the highway to Goolwa or Karakalinga, then you get perspective. You get down to the beach or something and you walk that beach and you think, why do I stay so long at work? Sometimes we think, if I'm not putting in all these hours, the sun won't come up and the earth will stop revolving. But we can, I think it's about creating the evidence that you actually can do it. And then when you start doing it regularly, having hobbies or interests or going away on holidays, and you realize that the ship keeps moving in the same direction, then.
That's really interesting. Mm. I love that, that you need to create evidence. And that goes back to what you were saying, Ron, when you started one of your jobs. Ron said this a while ago in the Work-Life Balance series that he took 4 or 6 weeks holidays right at the start and someone said to you,
became a tech chair.
You can't have holidays. And you're like, why? I just did.
Yeah.
Because you didn't know any better.
Well, the thing is that sometimes we impose rules or we think there are rules about what we can and can't do.
Because you've imposed them on yourself.
Because you've imposed them on yourself. Now, when I started becoming a tech chair, I didn't realize that you couldn't take 6 weeks holiday or that wasn't the norm. So I'd already organized it. I took 6 weeks holiday and I worked around it. And these other guys, when I would talk to them about it, said, oh, I didn't know you could do that. Well, why didn't you know? Because you'd never asked the question.
And you'd created evidence.
Yeah, yeah.
But on a scale of 0 to 100, where 100 is the hardest things you have to do, going away on a holiday isn't all that hard. It's so doable.
When you're a business owner, though, to your point, like I notoriously didn't take holidays because I was worried that everything would just collapse. And that obviously, in retrospect, means either you don't trust your people or you are not a good business leader. And I'll say that out there. I've learned through time and pain to take holidays and to do those things. But sometimes it doesn't come naturally to business people.
Yeah. And people have these beliefs about things. I remember one of my members of my tech group, he had a dream that he wanted to take 6 months off when he turned 50. But it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen.
6 months.
Six months. Now, we took that dream and we made it for the group a challenge to help him set things up. And eventually he took 6 weeks off.
Yeah, that's doable.
Well, that's doable.
Yeah.
And he was still concerned about it, but he did it. And he had the mechanisms in place where somebody could look after the business in the business. He came back from that 6 weeks and he went to the Greek islands. I actually caught up with him there. And the business had made more money while he was away than it had in the previous 6 months.
Wow.
Isn't that freeing? Wow.
Yeah. And his petrol tank is full. And then he's going to be working so
And I'm
much
happy
better.
To say that he went on to take about 3 months a year off.
That's brilliant.
But he had the mechanisms in place to help him do that. But that was because he was able to break the belief.
Yep.
Which was only a self-imposed belief. He was able to break the belief.
That's interesting.
And do something
Isn't
about it.
Business builders need to work on themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
So right. How many times have you said that over this podcast?
A lot.
Yeah.
But it sinks in, right? Because I was lucky enough to find mentors along the way. Ron was one of them earlier on. We've had Tanya Conti on here. She was another of my mentors. But these people got stuck into me about, well, you're doing this. Well, that you probably should think about doing something different. And I think people who are running businesses, people who are growing through the business journey really do need coaches and mentors. And that's a role we try to take with this podcast is just have that voice so that they can think about sometimes other things than work. There is more to life.
Oh, and, absolutely.
And getting that perspective that you talked about before is so important. Mm. And maybe we can do some of that through the podcast.
So moving on from that then, we've talked about all of these benefits. So let's say we were doing what Brenton used to do way back when, doesn't take holidays, doesn't take breaks, doesn't sleep well. Hopefully none of our listeners are doing that, but there might be one or two. What are the long-term consequences of ongoing sleep deprivation that they should be aware of that maybe can help motivate them to think about making some changes in their life and their sleep patterns?
Yeah, well, one of the obvious ones is burning out. That's a long-term consequence. Not all of my patients are burnt out, thank goodness, but some of them are. And perhaps if they had have got onto the sleep problem and the anxiety and the stress a bit earlier, they could have prevented that. But mainly the long-term consequences of not sleeping well are more on the mental health areas. So definitely anxiety, definitely depression. And there is a little bit of talk in the media that if you don't sleep well, then you're going to end up with dementia. And it was really interesting at the Australasian Sleep Conference last week. Flinders University did an excellent study just recently. So it's a meta-analysis where they collated all the results of randomized controlled studies for people that have had insomnia and good sleepers. So they looked at the lifespan, so the longevity of those two groups. And if people with insomnia got dementia, they would die sooner. That's just how the logic goes. But there was no significant difference between the lifespan of people who had insomnia and normal sleepers.
So, really?
Yeah, it's I guess there's a couple of media personalities that they cherry pick little bits of research here and there to create wildfires, so to speak, and get people really anxious about, oh my God, if I don't sleep, I'm going to get insomnia and I'm going to get dementia. And it sells their books and they make lots of money out of it. But I think it's good news that if you've got insomnia, you're not looking down the barrel of dementia. And it's very well treated. So the number of people that come into my practice who have read those books or listened to those TED Talks or are listening to those particular podcasts, and they say, Kristen, I'm going to get dementia if I don't sleep better. So I can reassure them and say that that is not conclusive science. Obviously, everyone wants to sleep better and that can be easily done, but the anxiety that it stirred up in the community. But yeah, certainly the science is not conclusive.
Is it stirring up that anxiety because there's a lot of people who have sleep problems? Like you said, 15 to 20%. And I would, when I have had sleep problems, I think things I did is I got online and found those Delta Wave songs that go on and on for 8 hours. And I think it might have helped. Maybe it was a subconscious thing, but I'd leave that playing beside my bed. And I actually remember researching, well, how do I sleep better? How do I learn to sleep? And that's how I got onto that Delta Wave music.
Yeah.
But you would imagine people go out there and try and find resources so they would come across these books, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. And so, yeah, so I think the takeaway message is that if you have got insomnia, it's very treatable. And there's no point making a person getting all anxious that, oh my God, I'm going to get dementia or have a stroke or have cardiovascular problems. There are other sleep disorders that have those as risk factors like sleep apnea.
Okay.
But that's not insomnia.
Yeah. Okay.
So definitely my patients are at risk of anxiety and depression and burnout, and that's certainly not good. And if a person is burnt out, it affects their relationships as well. So it's worth preventing rather than curing, I would say.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But the good news is it's treatable.
Definitely is.
So if you have these sort of problems, and this is advice for our business builders, if you have these sort of problems, seek out professional help. And the good thing from my perspective, I hate putting drugs into my body unless I choose to, but I hate having to take drugs. There are treatments that don't rely on you becoming potentially addicted to some type of pharmaceutical treatment.
Yeah.
And that to me, that's fantastic news.
It'd be terrible to rely on a drug for sleep. That would just be the worst.
Absolutely. And some of my patients rattle when they come in. But, yeah, cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia is well known that it should be the first-line treatment. And doctors know that too. So, but, yeah, I guess sometimes people think, but is there a quick fix? And I guess also good news is if a person is taking sleeping medication and they want to withdraw from that, well, that's also something that a sleep psychologist will do. I certainly do it.
So, Kristen, just to wrap up, here on the Business Builders Podcast, we offer practical advice to business professionals.
Yep.
So as we wrap up, could you share your top three tips or piece of advice for those seeking help or looking to improve their sleep, even when they're dealing with high stress levels?
Yeah, so this, I think the most practical thing, given what we've talked about today, is don't spend too much time in bed and make sure that you're sleepy when you get into bed.
I actually really like that. It's the opposite of what you would think.
Mm. Yeah.
That kind of rings true for me.
And you heard it here first on the Business Builders.
Yeah, because if you can be relaxed when you get into bed, but that's not sleepy.
Mm.
Yeah, you've got to be sleepy in your eyes. The second bit of practical advice I would say is, try not to worry in bed. Like if you're aware that you're worrying in bed, that can be a sign to do something about that. So go and see a GP, perhaps get a referral to see a psychologist, because what we do is we teach people how to let go of worries, how to not dwell on the past, how to live in the present. So, and the third bit of advice I'd say is try to love your bed. Love your bed. Good sleepers love their bed. But people with insomnia, they don't love their bed. Bed is a place where they flip around like a rotisserie chicken and they overthink and toss and turn. Meanwhile, their partners are snoring their heads off and they wish they could do that. So try to love your bed and don't work in your bed.
So does that mean also invest in your bed and / bedroom?
Yeah. I guess if you've got the resources to do that. I guess it is important to feel comfortable when you're in your bed. And yeah, I think bedrooms are worth investing in, but I wouldn't say, like, if someone came to see me, I wouldn't say go and buy a $3,000 bed and that's going to fix your problems. But a bed should be a nice place to get into. Yeah.
So the other one is seeing a sleep psychologist. So you talked about worrying. We would go see a doctor or a psychologist. If you're in Adelaide, South Australia, and you're listening to this, how do they find you, Kristen?
Well, Google.
Yeah.
I guess if you Google sleep psychologist, there's about 30,000 psychologists in Australia, and there's only about 30 full-time equivalent sleep psychologists. So there's not many of us around, and there's perhaps only about 4 or 5 full-time equivalent sleep psychologists in Adelaide. So definitely, definitely if you Google sleep psychologist in Adelaide, most of us will come up. There's also on the Australian Psychological Society website, there's a Find a Psychologist search engine.
Yeah, okay.
But here's something too, like the treatments for insomnia are very specialized and not everybody gets that training. So if you have got a sleep problem and you go to see a psychologist and they perhaps teach relaxation skills or mindfulness skills and they're not doing a restriction or something like a behavioral treatment like that, you might be missing out on a very big component of good sleep therapy.
Yeah.
So definitely if you've got a sleep problem, try and see a sleep psychologist.
Okay. And your business is called?
Adelaide Insomnia Clinic.
So if you're in Adelaide, look up Adelaide Insomnia Clinic and Dr. Kristen Kemp. If you're in Australia, it was
the Australian Psychological Society website has a search engine.
Right.
Yeah. But sometimes psychologists who haven't got that specialized training, they'll say, yes, I'll help you with your sleep. Mm. But it really needs to have that bedtime restriction component to it
How do you know that the person is a qualified sleep psychologist?
Yeah, you'd probably have to ask them. Or otherwise, often on the websites, they might say that, if I think of the sleep psychologist in Adelaide, most of us, that's all we do.
Mm.
Yeah. So, Adelaide Insomnia Clinic, you'd be pretty sure we're going to be talking about insomnia.
And I would imagine for our international listeners that there's similar services globally, I would imagine.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Fortunately, sleep psychologists are worldwide. And as I said, cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia is well known, backed up by science, plenty of evidence that it is the first line treatment for insomnia.
I have a feeling, Ron, that we could talk about this a lot longer because there's a bunch of other questions I've got burning in my head, but we've run out of time.
Well, there's always the potential to get Kristen back.
Would you like to come back at a future date, Kristen?
I have to check my life-work balance, I think.
Oh, look at that.
Well done.
So if you are listening, this is part of the Life-Work Balance series, as Kristen was talking about. We talked with Dr. Samantha Young a few weeks ago, and before that we talked about why you should actually prioritize your life-work balance. So plenty of material if you've just started listening. And we've got a few episodes before Christmas, Ron. Two episodes to go, I think.
Two episodes to go, and we'll continue the series until the end of the year.
Okay, so we'll finish it off just before Christmas.
And then start the new year with a new topic.
Okay, well, it's been lovely chatting with you, Dr. Kristen Kemp.
It's been lovely to be here. Thank you for making the time.
And thank you everyone who's been listening. It's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.